The question of why we do what we do is sometimes an important question. Sometimes it's important to know why it is that you do the things you do. Like, why do we do church the way we do it? Sometimes it's not important to know why we do the things that we do. Like, for instance, at Christmas, why do we have Christmas trees? I don't know. Doesn't really matter. Like, everyone else puts up a Christmas tree. It's nice. You have this nice tree in your house. It makes your house smell like Christmas. And you do it. Everyone else does it. You're participating in something bigger. Why anyone decided to put a tree in their house in the first place, I don't know. Doesn't matter. It's not a big deal. Why do we have chocolate at Easter time? I don't really know. It's not in the Bible that we should eat chocolate, but chocolate is good. We like eating chocolate. It's good to have an excuse to eat chocolate. We don't really need to know why. We just do it. It's good. Chocolate is good. We don't need to know why. All right, it's fine. But there are other things where it's important to know why we do the things that we do. Why do you separate your coloreds from your whites when you do a wash? It might be important to know why, because one day you won't do it, and then you'll do it sometimes. Then one day all your clothes will come out pink, and then you'll realize why you separate your clothes when you do a wash. Or on a bigger scale, why do we not speed? It's important to know why we don't speed, because if you don't know why you don't speed, you'll probably just speed. You'll be like, oh, this is all arbitrary. And then you'll speed, and then you could cause a lot of damage to yourself and to other people. It's important to know why someone is arrested, and it's important for them to know why they have been arrested and what crime they have been charged with. Otherwise, how can they get a fair trial if they don't know what they're there for? How can justice be done? Sometimes it's important to know why. And when we come to church, it is important to know why we do church. What is it that motivates us as we do church? And it's not good enough to say, well, that's just the way we've always done it. Or we do it because everyone else is doing it. Or I always come to church on Sunday. That's why I do church. And, you know, we know this is true. Like, it's not like anyone here would probably say, yeah, no, it doesn't matter why we do church. It's just important that you come. But while we know in our heads the reasons why, practically, sometimes it's just that we keep turning up because that's what we do. We're in the habit of doing it. We do the things that everyone else does. And so what I want us to look at tonight is, once again, why are we doing this? As we do church in 2016 together, why are we doing this? What is it that motivates us? And I want us to be motivated by the same things that motivated Jesus. So we're not just here doing it a bit out of need for ourselves, doing it out of religion, or doing it out of compulsion, or doing it because other people will look down on us. We're doing it out of love for Jesus and out of a response to his mission, that we want to continue doing the things that he was doing. And Jesus, in the passage that we looked at, Jesus tells us the reason why he does his ministry. He has just come in off doing a lot of ministry in the area. He's probably been preaching and healing. He's getting a name for himself. And then he comes back to his hometown, and he comes into the synagogue, and he gets handed the scroll of Isaiah, and he looks up in Isaiah, this place where in Isaiah 61, which is, it is in our Bibles, they wouldn't have had the chapter number numbers in his day, but he gets to Isaiah 61 and he reads this passage out, and he says, the spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And what he is doing here is he is giving his manifesto. He's saying, this is why I do the things that I do. There are lots of people who give their manifesto. Superman, he gave his manifesto, and he said that it was to fight for truth, justice, and the American way. When Martin Luther King stood up and gave his I Have a Dream speech, that was his manifesto. Google has a motto, is what they are all about. Their motto is, don't be evil. Jesus is giving his manifesto. He is saying, this is what I am all about. And so it's important for us to break it down and have a look. Well, what is it exactly that Jesus is all about here? Well, the first thing he says, the spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me. And what he's saying there is he's saying he has been chosen by God to do something very particular. He has been anointed by God, chosen to become the Christ, the Messiah, the chosen one, to do God's work. Just as Frodo was the only one who could carry the ring and drop it into Mount Doom, Jesus is the only one who can do the job that God has given him to do. He is the chosen one. And what is this job that he has to do? It is to proclaim good news to the poor. His job is to tell the poor good things that God has done for them. And this is like the overarching theme of this. He says to proclaim good news to the poor, and then he kind of unpacks it a little bit. And so the question is then, well, who are these poor that Jesus is talking about? And some people are like, well, it's obviously the monetary poor, the people who are financially poor, they have nothing, and Jesus is speaking to them. And sometimes when I think about that, I'm like, well, how do you proclaim good news to the people who don't have any money? That's a little bit difficult for me to understand. It's like, is it just general good news? Did Jesus come up to someone and say, they're like, okay, I don't have any money? It's like, well, good news, it's the weekend tomorrow. Yeah. Like, if you don't have any money, then what is good news helpful for? Shouldn't Jesus said, I have come to give the poor a sustainable living wage? Like, that kind of makes sense if we're just talking about the monetary poor. And some people say, no, it's not the monetary poor, it's the spiritual poor. And it's probably true, it is the spiritual poor, but it's not just the spiritual poor. Because if Jesus spends all this time in his ministry talking about money, then obviously he cares about money too. If you look at Jesus' ministry, particularly in the book of Luke, you see that he cares about how we use our money and how we respond to people who are monetarily poor. And I think what Jesus is saying here is that his job is to proclaim good news to all the poor, any person who is poor in any way. Anyone who is excluded, who is poor in money, or poor in relationships, or poor in society, poor in their physical life, poor spiritually, whatever is going on, whoever is poor, he has come to proclaim good news. So if you are someone who is poor money, that if you don't have money, Jesus comes to say the good news is that God's kingdom is coming, where the first are last and the last are first, and God eventually will turn everything upside down so everybody has enough. The good news is that God is changing things. If you are someone who is physically poor, if you are unwell or you cannot live the life you want to live because of your physical ailments, Jesus has come to say the good news is that he has come to change things, that he has begun God's kingdom here, that he has started healing people now, that people can find healing in him, and that one day everybody who trusts in him will be given a new resurrection body. If you are relationally poor, that you don't have a family to go home to, Jesus says the good news is, I have come to make you children of God, that you can be part of God's family. And if when you join God's family, you have brothers and sisters and you will live forever with them. Are you spiritually poor? Do you know that you have nothing to present to God? Well, Jesus says it's okay because I give everything for you. So you are right with God. Wherever you are in your life, whatever poverty you have, Jesus has come to give good news to you, to show you what he has done. He goes on to say that there are he has freedom for those who are the prisoners, to proclaim freedom for the prisoners. And the question is, well, what does this mean? And when we look at Jesus' ministry, we don't see him going around to a lot of prisoners, you know, knocking on doors saying, guess what, you're free, you're free. He doesn't do that. So what is this? What are these prisoners that he's talking about? Well, what we see in the ministry of Jesus is he finds anyone who is imprisoned to Satan and he sets them free. You see that in the work that he does, casting demons out of people. Jesus is about setting people free. And if you are a prisoner to guilt, Jesus sets you free with forgiveness. If you are a prisoner to addiction, Jesus is here for you. Jesus has come to set you free from whatever is imprisoning you. Jesus comes to give sight to the blind. And people say, oh, are we talking about spiritually blind or physically blind? Well, we see Jesus healing people who are physically blind. So obviously he's come to do that. But usually when this is happening in the Gospels, the physical blindness is also a metaphor for spiritual blindness. And Jesus comes so that people may actually see what God is doing and not be blind to the work of God, but see that God has come to do a good thing in his Son. Jesus comes to heal people physically and spiritually. He has come to proclaim freedom for the oppressed. That you, whatever is oppressing you, Jesus comes to set you free. And lastly, he says that he comes to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And we're like, well, what does that mean? He's referring here to the year of Jubilee. And the year of Jubilee was this thing in the Jewish law that said that every 50 years, whatever was going on, everything would get kind of reset. So if you had debts that you owed people, the debts would be forgiven. If you were a slave, then you would be set free. If you had land that you had sold because you'd run out of money, the land would go back to your family. It's a wiping clean of the slate, that everything is new again. And this is a picture, the year of Jubilee, of what God is going to do in his Son Jesus when he wipes the slate clean for humanity, when he says, you do not will not have your sins held against you. That is, Jesus has come to say, God is not here to punish you, but here to save you. And he has come in his Son, Jesus. It is the good news of the year of the Lord's favor. And the good news for us is that we are still in that year. Because it's not just a chronological year. This is the period of God's favor. God's favor is upon us so that if we trust in Jesus, we can be saved. So that is what Jesus is all about. That is his manifesto. And we see that he lives it out. As he goes about his ministry, he proclaims good news to the poor. He sets people free. And ultimately see that he goes to the cross to set everyone free who trusts in him. And he rises again to give new life to everyone who will trust in him. And Jesus goes up into heaven. But before he goes, he gives his people the job of continuing on his work. That this is what Jesus is all about. So this is what we need to be all about. We continue what Jesus has started. That we need to be people who are also about proclaiming good news to the poor. We also need to be people who are about setting people free. Also need to be people about healing blindness, physical or spiritual. Whatever we can do to continue the work of Jesus, we do it. And that's what we need to be about here in this church in 2016. That we are motivated by the mission of Jesus. We continue what he started. We are about setting people free. Because that's what Jesus is about. When we continue doing this, we are continuing in a line of people who have done it for many, many years before us. From the time of Jesus. When I was a kid, there were a lot of things that I wanted to do when I was growing up. I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be a service station attendant. I aimed really high. I also, for a while, I wanted to be a firefighter. And I really wanted to be a engineer, just like my dad. And I didn't know exactly what it meant to be an engineer. I pretty much thought what it meant was that you wore a hard hat and then you went and stood around in places where there were diggers and bulldozers. And I was like, that seems like a pretty good life. I could become an engineer. I might do that. And now, you know, when I look back on it, I realize that I still don't exactly know what my dad did, but it seems to me that he did spend a lot of his life wearing a hard hat and standing around big machines, which sounds like it could have been a pretty fun life, except that I would have made a terrible engineer. And my parents were never like, you should follow in your father's footsteps. They're just like, you do whatever it is that you're good at and that you're passionate about, which I'm thankful for, and probably lots of people are thankful for, because if I became an engineer, probably all my bridges would fall down. And that would be terrible engineering, as far as I know. You are called to make bridges that stand up, not collapse. Although I could be a good pile engineer. I could make excellent piles. But otherwise, I would be useless. I would look great in a hard hat, though. Now, I did not continue on in my father's business. And if I have kids, they will probably not continue on in my business. But there are other businesses which get passed down from generation to generation to generation. One of the oldest family businesses in the world, maybe the oldest family business in the world, is a hotel that is in Japan, and its name is Nishimiya Onsen Kihin. That's That's the correct pronunciation. You can say that in Japan, they'll be like, yeah, it's over there. And this is a hotel that has been operating continuously since 705 AD. That's 1,311 years, I think. I'm not very good at maths, which is why I'd be a terrible engineer, but I think that's right. And these guys have been doing the same thing again and again and again for year after year after year for over a millennium. And it's not just that this hotel has been running for this long, but that it's been run by the same family for that entire time. That's 52 generations of the same family running that one hotel. Can you imagine the pressure when you are the 53rd generation to go into hoteling? You'd be like, you are going to run a hotel. It's like, oh, I was thinking I might just become an artist. No, hotel. You run the hotel. I don't know. Probably, you know, they can't all run the hotel or otherwise there'd be like 10,000 of them running this hotel. So some of them probably get set free, but some of them keep running it. And can you imagine, though, the skill that is built up in the family, the knowledge that is built up, that is passed down from father to son, mother to daughter, mother to son, father to daughter, parents to pets. They would know really well how to run a hotel. They would know precisely how to make the bed just right, exactly how to place those little shampoo bottles, just the right way to fold in the toilet paper so it's just the perfect triangle. Like, they would know exactly what to do. And there'll be stuff that has been passed down from thousands of years of information. Like, how do you best welcome a samurai when he comes to your hotel? Most hotels probably don't think about that, but they would have had to think about it. Or how do you deal with the emperor's politicians who come to visit you, and how do you feed their horses properly? Most hotels don't worry about that. They would have had to worry about it. It's been passed down from generation to generation to generation, and they just continue to do it. And I can imagine they just want to continue to do it for another 52 generations, and they will be fantastic at it. Now, when we come here to live out the call of Jesus, to follow Jesus, we are continuing in a family line. We are brothers and sisters who have been given a job to do, and we do it year after year, generation after generation. It's gone from Jesus to his disciples to their disciples, and eventually it's made it to us. So we don't get to like 2016 like, oh, look, we've figured out we're just going to scrap it all. We're going to do something completely new. It's like, well, actually, you know, we're part of a whole lineage of people who have followed the mission of Jesus. And to continue to do this well, we have to continue to go back to the source and say, well, why did Jesus do it? And how can we stick close to that? And so the things that we are going to do this year are not mind-bogglingly strange. We're not going to do anything crazy new. We're going to continue to do things that have been done for generation and generation. We will do them in the same spirit as Jesus, to continue his mission, to continue to be people who preach good news to the poor, who continue to be people who proclaim the year of God's favor. We will do that by meeting with Jesus, by growing with Jesus, by serving Jesus, and by sharing Jesus. We're going to meet with Jesus here at church, and here we are meeting with Jesus now. And we're going to make this service hopefully a place like it is now, a place where anyone can come and hear about Jesus. Anyone can come and meet with Jesus, whether you've known Jesus since you were born, or whether this is your first time coming to church and you have no idea what's going on, you can meet with Jesus here. That you can be welcomed, whoever you are, whatever your situation, whether you're rich or poor, whether you're sick or well, anyone can come here and be welcomed and loved and hear about God's good news to them. That we will make this a place where anyone can meet with Jesus. And we continue to do it because we love Jesus and we want to keep meeting with him. We want others to meet with him. We're going to grow in Jesus. And we're going to do that by going to small groups. We have a lot of good small groups which are running in this church. If you are in the youth, then there is Bible Jam, which should be starting up in a few weeks. There is young adult small groups if you are between the ages of 18 and 30-ish, or there's small groups for those people who are older than that, where we can meet together with other Christians and study the Bible together each week and be encouraged and prayed for and to help to live out God's call. We're going to grow in Jesus because we want to know him better. But we don't just meet with Jesus and grow in Jesus. We also are called to actually go out and serve him, to actually be good news to the poor, to actually do what we can for this world. And maybe it means that you are serving him here at this church, that you are serving him because you step up into ministry in the band or in welcoming or in youth leadership or in brigades, or maybe you serve him somewhere else. Maybe you serve him in a ministry to the homeless, or maybe you serve him by volunteering for an organization that does overseas aid work. I don't know what it is, but I want us to be people who serve Jesus, because Jesus didn't just call us to people who are saved, but people who also serve. And the other thing we're going to do is we're going to share Jesus. Because if this is good news, if this is good news that we are in the year of the Lord's favor, then other people need to know. And so we're going to pray for our friends and pray for our family. And we're going to look for opportunities to let them know about Jesus. And we're going to pray for opportunities to have those conversations. And maybe we're going to invite them to stuff. And we can even bring them here to church where they can meet with Jesus. And then the cycle can start again. That's what I want us to be about. It's simple, but it is the continuing the work of Jesus. Meet with Jesus, grow in Jesus, serve Jesus, share Jesus. That's what I want us to do. If anyone comes up with a better way for us to be continuing the work of Jesus, then let me know and we'll do that. Because what I want us to be about is not just doing the things that we've always done or doing the things that we're meant to do, but I want us to be about doing the things that Jesus calls us to do, to continue doing the things that he is doing, to be about what he is about. Now, often when I listen to sermons from people on Vision Sunday at the beginning of the year, often I hear these sermons which sound really inspiring. Sermons about how the preacher will stand up and say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get this church, and by the end of the year, we're going to plant 10 churches on every continent of the world. I'm like, wow, that'd be great. Or they say, no, you know what we're going to do? We're going to grow this church so there's 10,000 people in the church. I'm like, what, 10,000? That'd be fantastic. And they give you all these great ideas. We're going to spend $5 million. We're going to build a new ministry center. I'm like, yes, $5 million ministry center. Pool for the youth pastor, yeah. Like, I'm like, that'll be great. But then, you know, like, these are some really good visions, and you know, like, maybe that's what I should be doing, is saying some amazing thing. Like, I'm just saying, look, it's 2016. I'm going to make sure that by 2017, we're going to have 2,017 people attending this service every week. Like, that could be the vision. But the problem is, like, you know, you might get this great vision to do this, and if the Lord puts it on a pastor's heart to do it and he follows through, then that's great. But for me, you know, God hasn't given me this great vision. And sometimes if you have this great vision and then you don't achieve it, all you feel is guilt because you haven't got there. And it reminds me of this passage that we're looking at. That Jesus, when he speaks here, is not saying, look, you have to go out and you have to do amazing things. You have to be the greatest Christians in the world. He's not calling us to be the most amazing people ever. He's calling us to be faithful witnesses, to be faithful to what he is doing, to continue to do what he is doing, to continue his work. He looks after the results. We look after the faithfulness. It reminds me also of this passage in Isaiah, which you may have heard before, in Isaiah chapter 40. And I'll read to you from verse 28. It says, "Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and the young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint." And sometimes when we, you know, get to these places, like, we are going to be eagles, everyone. We're going to soar. It's going to be great. And I heard this preached on once by a preacher. And the preacher said, you know what this is about? It's about how God, he's going to make you soar. Eagles soar alone. Chickens roost together. And talked about how, you know, chickens, they never fly. They never do anything interesting. They just run around on the ground pecking food. But eagles, they're up in the sky soaring alone. And if you want to step out for God, you can soar like an eagle. And then they're like, you know why an eagle doesn't get weighed down by water when it rains? And I was like, why? It's like, because there's oil on the feathers. And I was like, oh. And everyone was like, it's an anointing. I was like, what? And it was like, be like the eagle. It's like, yeah, I want to be like the eagle. But then the problem is when you go home, you're like, I'm not like the eagle. I am not soaring today. I'm definitely not achieving great things today. I feel like a chicken. I don't want to be a chicken. I want to be an eagle, but I just feel guilty because I'm chickening today. And but then my Bible colleagues actually, he told me about this passage. He says, you gotta think about the order that it's in. Why is it in this order? Why does it go flying, then running, and then walking? He says, the reason is because you spend most of your life, you are not flying. You do a lot more running than you do flying. But instead of when you're running, you spend more of your life walking than you spend running. I was like, that makes more sense to me. Because I know that I rarely fly. And if I do fly, it's in a plane, not on wings of an eagle. And that's metaphorically, sometimes in my spiritual life, I'm going well, I'm flying. I'm like, yeah, this is great. But most of the time, it's not like that. Sometimes it's more like I'm running. And when I'm running and I'm running fast, and I feel good. I'm running along and the pavement's going beneath me really quickly. I'm like, look how fast I'm going. And then the trees are going fast. And then I start to get really tired. I'm like, oh no, this is the worst. And then I start to make these noises when I'm trying to run. And I'm getting so tired. I'm like, and then I start going, like that, like will spur me on. I feel sorry for all the people in the houses around because they just hear this poor guy go, and then I get to the end, I'm like, oh, I'm just going to vomit now. This is the worst. But if I could have the energy just to run and to run and to run, that would be so good. That God could empower me to do that. And it says that if I trust in God, sometimes I'll be running and he will be empowering me to do that. But most of my life, I don't spend running. I spend walking. And I walk a lot. And, you know, I would like to be able to just walk all day and not get tired. But if there's anything Christmas shopping has taught me is that I can't. I can't walk all day. I get sore feet. So I would need to be empowered to just walk and not get faint. And in my spiritual life, it's the same. Most of my life, I'm going to spend walking. And what this is saying to us is that wherever we are, God is there empowering us. And what I want us to be about as a church is that we are faithfully walking after what Jesus has done. We are following in his footsteps. And maybe we will fly as a congregation, and that'll be fantastic. Maybe, you know, this whole room will be full of people by the end of the year. Maybe hundreds of people will come to Jesus. If we are flying, it will be great. And the reason why we'll be flying is because we put our hope in the Lord, and it is he that raised us up on eagle's wings. If that happens, that is great. But maybe this year, all we will do is run. We'll run and we'll run, and this congregation will grow, and people will become Christians, and it'll be great. There'll be room for us to keep growing, and we're just like, God is doing good things. And if that happens, it will be because God has done it. But maybe the only thing we are called to do this year is to walk. That we walk and we walk and we walk, and we know that it is God who empowers us to do that. And I've seen you guys walk, and I've seen God work in your walking. This year that has been passed, we've seen people come to know Jesus. And I've seen you guys commit yourselves to what God has done. I've seen people step up into ministry and people get excited about what Jesus has done in the lives of their friends and their family. It's not been a year. It's like, oh, I'm going to write a book about this year. But not every year is a book year. Most years are walking years. And maybe 2016 is for us. It's going to be a walking year. Maybe it's a flying year. If it is, hooray. But maybe it's just a walking year. But we can trust that God will be with us there. That he will walk with us. He will give us what we need to continue in the footsteps of Jesus. To continue to be a people who are empowered by him to be about preaching good news to the poor. Recovery of sight to the blind. Freedom to the oppressed. Release to the captives. The year of God's favor. 2016 is the year of the Lord's favor. And here in this church, we want to be about that. That we will see people set free, that we will live in God's freedom, and we will walk or run or fly after what God has for us. If you are not a Christian, then what this means for you is that God has good news for you. He is not out to get you. He doesn't want to punish you for all your sins. He wants to love you. He wants to forgive you. He wants to welcome you into his family. And he wants to give you a reason to live. He wants to give you a reason to walk, to run, or to fly. If you put your trust in him, he will save you. He will change you. He will welcome you into his family, and he will give you new life. This is a good year to discover Jesus. And if you are a Christian, then what you need to know is that you need to be about what Jesus is about. To be about living in his power, helping people know the good news of Jesus, the year of the Lord's favor. And if you fly this year, then thank God that it's him who enables you to fly. If you run this year, then enjoy the power of running, and that it's God who gives you that strength. And if all you do is walk, then thank him that it is him who sustains you, and walk well following after Jesus. How about I pray? Lord God, we thank you that we have a new year before us, that we have new opportunities to serve you. We have new opportunities to see people saved, to see lives changed, to pray for others that you might work in their lives. We pray that we might be committed to seeing you, that we might be committed to doing what you do, to following after Jesus. And pray that in the ways that we meet with Jesus, grow in Jesus, serve Jesus and share Jesus, that we will do it in your strength, in your power. I pray, Jesus, that we will be able to look back on this year and see that we have come some way. Maybe we've come a long way. Maybe it's just a little way. But we will look back on this year and we'll say, we are not where we were at the beginning of the year, because you have been empowering us to follow after you. Amen.